This is a photo from an article in the Seattle Times probably 5 years ago. It was taken in the early, mid-1960s. The piece was about the 106 years of history of Brocklin's Tuxedo and Costume Shop in Seattle. They were closing down at the time, and it seemed the right time to do a little piece that would profile what that had meant to that community. It's a tuxedo and costume shop. And if you see the fellow there, that's Ray D'Ambrosio. He was the owner and proprietor of the place. But the woman, do you recognize the woman? That's my grandma. That's Margaret Parks. I always heard them call her Peg Parks. When my dad was a child, my grandmother went to work for them in the 1930s, and she stayed there until she died in the 1970s. Peg Parks. She was the master of Brocklin's costume department, and for good reason, she could make just about anything. Halloween stuff, outfits for stage shows. She could make sort of promotional garments that could be worn. If you needed a Batman, she could do it. If you needed top hat and tails, that was easy. Things for stage shows or Elvis Presley or King Lear, I mean, whatever it was. In the article, it says that there were a lot of calls from men to the costume department, men who would ask for a fig leaf costume. They would refer them to my grandmother, who would just say, well, small, medium, or large. She married my grandfather when she was 17. My grandfather died when he was 59 years old. So if you do a little bit of arithmetic, you realize that my grandmother spent the last dozen or so years of her life, and she worked at Brocklin's right to the very end. Thanks, Chris. The United States Census reports that 800,000 people every year are widowed. 800,000. And you can guess that almost 700,000 of those are women. Of the 14 million or so widowed persons living here in this country, over 11 million of them are women. Worldwide, there are about 240, 250 million women who are widowed every year, and over half of them end up in what the United Nations defines as devastating poverty. There's 9 million in Japan, 13 million in Indonesia, 42 million in India, and 43 million more in China. And it's not hard to imagine what happens to somebody in those circumstances. There's increased rates of illness, increased rates of the risk of dying themselves, emotional problems, sleep disorders, and certainly economic trouble. In fact, on average, 75% of survivors' financial support is very quickly lost after they become widowed. Our world is not good at this. Our culture is not good at this. We're not good at this. Even though it's probably better now than it's ever been, we live in a world that's not fair, in a world that is not equitable, not just when it comes to women in general or widows in particular. There are some confirmation students in the room. I'm going to quiz a little bit on the Ten Commandments, but have you got those in your head? Think about the two tables of the law, the two tables of the Decalogue. You remember the first part that has to do with our devotion, our relationship with God, right? Those are the first three commandments. What are they? No other gods. You cannot take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Third one, remember the Sabbath. Come on. Now, the other table, the second table, the great second part of the Ten Commandments really has to do with our relationships, our commitments, our responsibilities to one another. And what is the first commandment there? Honor your father and your mother. It's probably occurred to you that that's not just about compliance and obedience, doing what your mom or your dad says. But it is about care for them in their age. Care for them when they have no other means or way or relationships of support. No wonder it's first. So much has changed, and so little has changed. On the other side, my grandmother Mabel, she's my mom's mom, she was a widow too. She was a farmer's daughter, and she married a man 20 years her senior. He died when he was just 60 years old, and that meant that my grandmother on my mom's side lived 40 years without a husband. And like so many that migrated to the West Coast back in the day, in those early 1950s, when farming changed forever in the Midwestern United States, when it was no longer a sustainable way to make a living, they moved. They came out west. They came out here. My grandfather went to work as a custodian in the local school district. My grandmother, Mabel, she cleaned motel rooms down by the airport. That was her gig. And like so many women who watch other people's kids, who pick produce under the hot sun, who sort mail at loading docks, or who run dry cleaning machines at the laundromat, she worked. Like so many women who are stretched thin, sometimes having two jobs just so they can earn as much as a man. Single moms. Ones who are taken advantage of by those in power over them. Women who endure the indignity of unwanted sexual attention from men who feel entitled or men who should know better. Women who are judged by the standards based on gender rather than merit. Women who are often the first to suffer when an economy unravels. We're not good at this. I read an article this week by a woman. She got my attention. She changed my mind. She persuaded me to look again at the gospel, at this text that's before us. Meta Stamper is her name. She's a professor of New Testament. She finished at Princeton, and now she's working somewhere in a Presbyterian church in England. But she had me rereading Luke's gospel. And through her spectacles, her perspective, she read something that I'd never seen before, that had never occurred to me. She pointed to all the ways that widows are referenced there in the book of Luke. Can you think of them? Can you scroll through the chapters of that gospel in your noggin? For instance, it begins, chapter 2, early on, right in the birth narrative, Jesus' arrival is celebrated as the redemption of Israel. By whom? By Anna. Anna the prophetess. Anna the widow. That one who was great in age, some 84 years, the daughter of Phanuel. The one waiting and waiting and waiting. A couple pages later in chapter 4, Jesus' first sermon, his inaugural address, if you will. He's talking about God's kingdoms, God's plans. And he retells the story of Elijah from the old book. And there he sees Elijah's care and advocacy for who again? Do you remember? A widow. The widow of Zarephath. Well, a few pages later, chapter 7, Jesus is busy healing the sick, even raising the dead. And then he comes to the dead son of who? Do you remember? The widow of Nain. Do you see this developing? I'd never seen it. Chapter 15, Jesus is teaching. He uses parables like the great teacher that he is. He talks about the lost son, the prodigal son we call him, the lost sheep, our favorite story, and then the lost coin, right? This precious sign of an inheritance, an endowment. And who is it that loses it? A widow. A widow. She finds it and she gathers her neighbors and there is rejoicing. And finally in chapter 21, when Jesus and his disciples finally make it to Jerusalem, there they're seated across the courtyard from the great gates of the temple in the city and they watch. It's the powerful, the big shots, the affluent come and drop their coins into the vessel. But Jesus spots another one. Who does he spot? Do you remember? You see where this is going. She's the widow, and she drops in her lepton, her mite, as we like to say. And then Jesus levels this blistering criticism of those who had exploited her. All these episodes, all these narratives are unique to Luke. None of those stories appear in Mark or Matthew or John. Luke, what are you up to? Jesus, what are you up to? In a certain city, there was a judge who neither feared God nor had respect for people. In that city, there was a widow who kept coming to him and saying, grant me, what? Justice against my opponent. Well, for a while, he refused, but later he said to himself, though I fear God, have no fear of God and no respect for anyone, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will grant her, what? Justice, so that she may not wear me out continually in her coming. Well, the Lord said, listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God grant her justice? Will not God grant her justice to his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? His chosen ones? Who is that? Widows. Maybe we should choose them too. God's plan, God's presence, God's purpose, justice for the widow. God's power is realized in our treatment of women, how we talk to them, how we touch them, how we honor them. If Luke's gospel is any measure of the veracity of the wholeness or the integrity of Christian community, it is in the manner of the well-being of the widows, moms and daughters and grandmothers and sisters in Christ. Can you name a widow? Peg, Mabel, they're the ones I know, I remember the best. In your life, in your circle, maybe you're the one yourself. You have that name on your lips? Would you whisper it to somebody else right now? Mabel, God's chosen one. Peg, God's chosen one. Whisper that to somebody else.